Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk, RNIB Connect Radio's regular journey into the world of accessible technology. I'm Dave Williams. Fantastic to have your company. As always, don't forget that Tech Talk, it's your programme. And if you've got something to say about technology, accessible or inaccessible, we'd love to hear it. You can, of course, drop us a line. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H, talk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about a new app from Guide Dogs that has been created to track guide dog refusals. We'll also be learning about the accessibility features you'll find on Sky Q, and we'll be joined by Joe Fullerton, who will be telling us about some of the more accessible ways you can use technology to learn a language. So stay tuned. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Joining us, as always, are our co-hosts, Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman. A very warm welcome in to you both.
Hello, good to be here. Looking forward to hearing more about the Guide Dogs app.
How about you, Tasneem? Are you looking forward to that?
Hello, good to be here, as always. I'm particularly interested in Joe Fullerton's about the language, learning more about that. So I speak a couple of languages myself, so it'll be really interesting to hear how technology can link in with that.
Brilliant. Well, stick around for another packed Tech Talk. Many of us who are blind or partially sighted have felt the dismay and embarrassment when confronted with a taxi or restaurant that has refused to accept either ourselves or a friend or family member with a guide dog. Well, the Guide Dogs organisation are very aware of this problem and have launched a new campaign and app to help record and report guide dog refusals. Toby Davey now has the story.
Access refusals is something I think that many blind and partially sighted people have come across in their lives. And for me, as a guide dog owner, I have certainly come across a few access refusals over the years. Well, Guide Dogs have just launched their new Open Doors campaign and smartphone app to support guide dog owners, educate businesses and service providers, and help to seek to strengthen the law around access refusals too. I'm now joined here on RNIB Connect Radio by Clive Wood, Guide Dogs Lead Regional Policy and Campaigns Manager, to tell me a bit more about this Open Doors campaign and smartphone app. Hello, Clive, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, Toby. Thank you for having me on.
Clive, as a guide dog owner myself, I have certainly come across a few access refusals over years, some which have been turned around with a more positive result and some which I don't think really may have made any changes at all to the service provider or business. Clive, could you tell me a bit about how the Open Doors campaign and app came about and how you see the campaign helping to support guide dog owners and strengthen the law around access refusals?
Well, Toby, at Guide Dogs, we are continuing to hear on a regular basis from guide dog owners who experience access refusals from all types of businesses, be it restaurants, cafes, pubs, shops, and taxis as well. And obviously, we know it's discriminatory. It's against the law in terms of the Equality Act and the Disability Discrimination Act in Northern Ireland. And we know that this is a real issue. And we've been listening, and we know that something more needs to be done. And this is why we've started the Open Doors campaign. There's three elements to that. We want to raise awareness with the general public, actually, that, you know, refusing a guide or other assistance dog into any form of business is illegal. We want to make sure that guide dog owners are getting the support they need from us. And we want to work with businesses and service providers to educate them, to make sure that their staff are aware what the law is and how they can help, not just guide dog owners, other assistance dog owners, and blind and partially sighted people in general. And this is why we started the Open Doors campaign and introduced the new Guide Dogs app.
And the Guide Dogs app is great because you can actually, if you do come across an access refusal, you can go into the app and show people some advice about access, as well as logging that access refusal there and then and providing a little bit more details, which I think will be fed back to Guide Dogs. When an access refusal is logged in the app, what sort of help and support will a guide dog owner get from Guide Dogs, and how will that access refusal be followed up?
So if anybody does use the app or even contacts Guide Dogs in other ways to report an access refusal, we can give the support that that individual needs. So it could be that they need support to prepare a letter or know how to contact the service provider where they've had the experience of an access refusal. It might be that they want our support to do that and contact the service provider. It might be that they just want some information. They just want to know what their rights are and what action they can take. But also, it's about being able to log this information so that we've got a stronger evidence base of how many access refusals are happening, because we know that we only hear of a limited number of access refusals. We don't hear about all of them. And this is why we've introduced the app, so that people can find it, another option in terms of reporting those apps. So they might not need any support from us at all, and they're just going to log the issue with us, which is absolutely fine. But if they do need more support or more information, our team will be there to support them and take them through the process of making a complaint or just providing the information they need to do it for themselves.
And part of the campaign is obviously to strengthen the law around access refusals. How will the use of the Open Doors app help to strengthen the law and maybe sort of tighten it up and make it a little bit tighter around access refusals?
We know that the current laws, the Equality Act and the Disability Discrimination Act in Northern Ireland, it doesn't have enough teeth. And we really would think that the law does need to be tightened up. At the moment, it's very difficult for a guide dog owner to go through the process. It's quite stressful, it's quite complicated. And actually, it's one other thing that you don't really want to be going through. If you'll get refused access to a business, a shop, for example, or a cafe or a restaurant, that is civil law. So the onus of responsibility is on the guide dog owner to take action. If it's a refusal into a taxi, be it private hire or minicab, then the guide dog owner can get support and should inform the local licensing team where the incident happened within the local authority. And then the local licensing team should be giving support to that guide dog owner and investigate the alleged refusal. With taxis and private hire vehicles, it is actually a criminal offence. And we want to make sure that, and this is a key part of our Open Doors campaign, is that we want to work with businesses, service providers, to make sure that they are taking an open doors approach to ensuring guide dog and other assistance dog owners are welcome into their businesses so that they can spend their money.
A number of guide dog owners seem to be wearing body cams to capture access refusals, and some seem to be also posting up their videos online and sharing them through social media. What would Guide Dogs' advice be to owners about videoing or audio recording an access refusal? And is it okay to then post up those videos or audio recordings up onto social media and name and shame the business or service provider?
I mean, social media has become commonplace in terms of sharing experience, both positive and negative. I would say that probably if you do receive an access refusal, I think the most important thing is actually to complain first and perhaps then look at using social media. But I think it's important to make sure that you're giving a business the opportunity to respond to your complaints. Now, social media is being used widely, but if people want to use social media to share their experiences, I don't think as an organisation we would say that that's not appropriate. But I would just say be cautious to make sure that you are taking the opportunity to complain about a refusal before you're considering using social media. And I know it's frustrating as a guide dog owner myself. An access refusal is humiliating, it's frustrating, it makes you angry. But I would certainly encourage people, first of all, to complain about the access refusals to the business, but also let us know through either through the app or in other forms to, so that we know about this and we can support you if you need it. And if you need advice about using video, please give us the opportunity to give you that support and advice. And that's what we're here to do.
Clive, if listeners would like to maybe support the Open Doors campaign and download the smartphone app, where can people go to find out more and download the app?
We want as many people as possible who are guide dog owners to download the app and use it if they can. And they can do that by either going to their normal app store, be it on iOS or Android. The app is free. We also started a petition as part of the Open Doors campaign, which we would encourage as many people to sign as possible, asking whoever is going to be our Prime Minister in the coming months to ensure that legislation has teeth and will ensure that businesses are opening their doors to guide dogs and other assistance dog owners. And can I just say as well that although we have the app and we hope as many people will be using it as possible, you can still report access refusals through our guideline, which is 0800 781 1444, or you can email information@guidedogs.org.uk.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Clive Wood from Guide Dogs, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and sharing more about the new Guide Dogs Open Doors campaign and app.
So, our very own Callum Stoneman, you, sir, are a Guide Dog user. Would you use this app?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really looking forward to trying this out because, you know, yeah, I am a Guide Dog owner. I've had a Guide Dog for about 6-7 years now, and yeah, I've been there far too many times. You know, you mainly with taxis for me, not so much restaurants. I've had a couple where they've said, oh, no, you can't bring the dog in. And then we explain that, you know, she's a guide dog and it's against the law to refuse. And sometimes it's gone to the point of like getting a manager, but then eventually they've gone, no, sorry, no, you can come in. But taxis, yeah, it is difficult, especially with taxis, because a lot of the time what they'll do is just see the dog and drive off. And at that point, we know that the refusal was because of the dog, but it's difficult getting the proof sometimes. So yeah, if there was a, this app is providing a quick and easy way to report it, yeah, I'm definitely on board with this.
And do you think, Callum, perhaps having an app in that situation, you know, it might help with sort of capturing accurate information? Because presumably, you know, if you let these things go a few days or weeks before you actually report it, you might forget some of the details.
Yeah, exactly. And I think sometimes it can be that sort of situation where you have a refusal and then your main focus, or at least for me, is, okay, what am I going to do next? How am I going to get to where I need to be? And then, you know, once you've eventually sort of calmed down, you've then got to kind of ring guide dogs and try and explain. And yeah, you do kind of forget, or you get to a point where you're a bit like, oh, it doesn't matter, I'm home now, or I'm where I need to be, whatever, I'll just, you know, I might just kind of leave it. But no, hopefully, if the app is simple enough and easy to use, which I'm sure it will be, then yeah, if you can just get your phone out and submit a quick report with all the details and guide dogs can capture that and do something about it, it's a great idea.
Tasneem, you, like me, don't have a guide dog, but we do have many blind and partially sighted friends who may do. How aware are you of this problem?
I was aware that it was an issue, but I guess not as prevalent as it has been, I guess. I mean, I think it's amazing that guide dogs have brought this toolkit, something that blind and partially sighted people, when it happens in real time that they're refused access, they can actually be proactive about it and log it immediately without forgetting any details, without kind of, even if they're not able to get through to guide dogs, or if they don't want to do something immediately, they want to leave it a few days, but actually they can log a record of it, which I think is really essential.
Yeah, and remembering to include all the information, I suppose, that's where the app perhaps adds value. Have you ever been there, Tasneem, when somebody has been refused with a guide dog?
I haven't actually, no. And I've never experienced it myself because I'm not a guide dog user, but I can imagine that it can be an incredibly difficult and frustrating situation for people to be in.
So a few years ago, I tried to enter a restaurant with a friend who was a guide dog user, and we were refused. And I actually walked past the guy on the door and said to the diners, "Ladies and gentlemen, very sorry to interrupt your meal. However, my friend here has been refused entry to the restaurant. I just wanted to check with yourselves that nobody here has an issue with somebody with a guide dog coming in." And nobody did. Often it's ignorance on the part of the staff about what the law actually is, and rarely does a week go by when we don't hear another story in the media. So I think any tools or technology that we can bring to bear on this problem surely is a good thing. Callum Stoneman, you've got a guide dog. I really hope you don't get a guide dog refusal in the next week or so, but would you be willing to have a little play with the app and maybe record a little demo for us possibly?
Yes, I suppose. Yeah, I can do that. Hopefully, as you said, it won't be a refusal, but we can have a look at it.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we shall look forward to hearing that. Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman with their thoughts. And if you have tried the new app from Guide Dogs and you have any thoughts about it, do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now, I've come to my living room to share with you some of the accessibility features found from SkyQ. Now, SkyQ is a service and set-top box from Sky that offers access to hundreds of free and premium TV channels, plus many video-on-demand services, apps, and other entertainment such as Spotify. I'm not going to give you a comprehensive demonstration of all the features on the SkyQ box, but I will highlight some of the features that I think are of greatest interest for those of us who are blind or partially sighted. There are several boxes available in the SkyQ range. I have the 1 terabyte SkyQ box. We've had it for about 18 months. And the box itself is sort of like a large router, I guess it feels. You've got an embossed Sky logo on the top, so, you know, very identifiable. And then there are some buttons on the front, and we'll come to that in just a moment. So in this review, we'll talk about the remote control, we'll talk about voice guidance, and I'll also share with you some information about the accessible ways in which you can control the box remotely when away from home. And then we'll wrap up with some final thoughts and perhaps some observations about the way in which SkyQ accessibility could be improved even further. Right, so without any further ado, let's start with the remote control. Well, of course, the first task with any TV remote control is finding it. You know, often they slide down the back of the couch or on the floor or somebody else moves it. And Sky have very thoughtfully added a feature where you can press the Q button in the centre of the front of your set-top box and it will cause the remote to beep. So let's do that now. There we go. We've found the bot, the remote control, and I've got it in my hand. But that's just a really clever and simple feature. I almost wish every device that had a remote control would do that. So the handset, as you would expect, it's got a standard keypad at the bottom, you know, laid out in the telephone style with the zero. There are a couple of dots to indicate where the number 5 is located. And then above that, we've got 2 rows of 4 buttons. There are the colored buttons, the red, yellow, green, blue on the bottom row. And then the row above that starts with the mute button, followed by there's a search and an info and so on. I don't remember exactly what they all do because you don't really need to use them all, and you can find that out from Sky. The important things are on the left hand side you've got the volume rocker, and on the right hand side you've got the channel up and down, and in the middle there are 2 buttons, the uppermost of which is the button for the microphone that is in the remote control, and the bottom one is the record button. So they are, I would say, the most important buttons, and they are located in the middle of the remote, above which we find a wider button, which is our home button. There's a back or escape, which is to the left. And then a more button to the right. Above that, we've got our directional arrows. And then above that, we have our play pause with rewind to the left and fast forward to the right. And then at the very top, on the left-hand side, there is a power button. There's a sky button, which is in the top middle. That'll take you to your recordings in your planner. And then on the right-hand side, there is an AV button that will allow you to tell your TV which source you want to use. The easiest way to do a lot of what you'll want to do in terms of controlling Sky is to use the microphone button, because you simply hold in the microphone button and then you say the content that you want. So you can say a channel name, or you can say, what should I watch? And it'll give you a list of recommendations. So let's just demonstrate that now. I'll press and hold the microphone button and I'll ask for a channel, and hopefully Sky will just take me to that channel. So let's do that now.
Support the short-term option.
Okay, there's the TV. I'm just going to turn that down a little bit using the volume button there. Okay, and then I'm going to press my microphone button and I'm going to ask for BBC One. Okay, so you heard there straight away, we went straight to BBC One. There was a beep. And we'll talk about what that means in just a moment. And then we heard the screen reader built into Sky Q announce BBC One, Bargain Hunt, HD, and some information about the programme. So we can do that for any of the hundreds of channels, so you don't have to remember any channel numbers, and also radio stations as well. So let's try that. This truly is the home of Jazz FM.
Jazz FM, 0202, Mid-Mornings with Deb Grant. Select to view the Mini TV Guide.
So there we go. So that's the easiest way, I think, to pretty much control any TV service. You can press the button on the front of your box, it'll find your remote, and then you can use the microphone button there to basically just ask for, you know, whatever content it is you want to watch. So really happy with the remote. It's got sort of standard batteries that you can replace yourself as well, so you don't need to worry about finding a special wire to recharge it or anything. They do have a larger, more accessible remote control available. You can speak to the accessibility team and they will send you that. But actually, I think for most blind people, this remote control is absolutely fine. So let's talk about some of the accessibility settings, the audio description and the voice guidance. So you heard there when I switched to BBC One, there was a beep. And that is one of the features of Sky Q, that when you land on a channel where a program is being transmitted with audio description, you can switch on beep on audio description and the box will do just that. So you know to expect audio description on a program that you may land on. So perhaps you're flicking through the channels and maybe you want to listen to something with audio description. So that beep can be quite reassuring. And you need to switch that on in the settings. So let's show you where you can find that. You can control a lot of your settings with your voice, but remembering exactly what to say, you know, sometimes might be challenging. So I'm going to show you how you can explore your way to the accessibility settings, and we'll walk through some of those. So I'm going to bring us off mute again, and then I'm going to press the home button, which, if you remember, was that sort of wider button below the down arrow just above the microphone button, and that'll take us into the home menu, and then I will arrow down to settings. So I'm going to do that now.
Manufacturers and others to make it more difficult.
Main menu, press up or down for different categories.
Okay, home. We're in the main menu. Home is top, and I'm going to arrow down. Settings is near the bottom. Settings. There we go. It's the third from the 12 of 14. And you heard there, we got a handy tip, select to choose. So we're going to do that.
Status.
Okay, and then we're going to arrow down to accessibility.
System info.
Goodbye.
Parental. Accessibility.
Okay, and I'm going to press select to go in there.
Accessibility.
And here are the accessibility options.
Audio description. If set to on, you'll hear an additional commentary that describes the action in a program where this service is available.
Okay, so that's audio description is on. And you can use the microphone to do that.
Audio description. description is set to on, you'll hear a
beep on audio description
channel that is showing an audio described program. 2 of 6. Subtitles is set to on.
Subtitles, obviously, to help with seeing what people are saying.
Highlight programs in the TV guide which have subtitles, audio description and or sign language available.
2 meters.
High contrast is set to on. Your Sky Q box will display in high contrast. 5.
So it's
voice guidance. Supported content on screen will be described audibly. Select with hints to hear extra details. Recommended for new users. Warning, turning this on will turn off Dolby Digital 5.1 audio.
Okay, now that's my first sort of little quibble, I suppose, with the accessibility features, is that last statement that when you switch on voice guidance, which is the screen reader service that is announcing text as it appears on screen, it will disable Dolby surround sound, essentially. So if you, like me, have got, you know, an AV amplifier and you've got lots of speakers in your living room, maybe you're somebody that likes Dolby Atmos, there is some Dolby Atmos content on Sky, then you cannot use that at the same time as using the voice guidance screen reader. So you do have to switch voice guidance on and off from time to time. And you may just decide to do that anyway, if you know what you're doing and you don't want everything to be spoken. And that's really easy. You just hold the microphone button and you say turn voice guidance on, turn voice guidance off, and you will get the appropriate result. And that's probably the easiest way, actually, when you first get Sky. If you want to enable voice guidance, just hold that button and just go turn on voice guidance. So as you heard there, you can have voice guidance on or on with hints. I've got it on with hints at the moment, which will give you some additional information as you move around. And of course, you heard there the audio description is available. So the third thing that I wanted to share with you is the most accessible way that I have found for setting remote recordings is to use an app. So if you have iPhone or an Android phone, then there are various apps that Sky make available for controlling your device. And the one that typically they are steering everybody to is the Sky Go app. And this will allow you to watch live TV, download content, and also to set recordings. And that's fine. It's worth noting, though, that content that you watch in the Sky Go app will not have audio description. Even if the audio description is available for that program on your set-top box, you won't get the audio description in the app. So important to be aware of that. So you may want to set it to record and then listen to the program with audio description when you get back home. Also, I've found that the old Sky Plus app still works. I'm not sure how much it's still being supported or updated, so your mileage may vary. But I actually find that the Sky Plus app is providing a little bit of a simpler interface. There are fewer controls, there are fewer tabs. I find it a little bit easier to get around. I find it to be a little bit more consistent. So it may be worth trying the Sky Plus app as well. So to wrap up, then, there are a good amount of accessibility features built into Sky Q. You can independently set recordings, switch on audio description, find out what's on, find out what programs have audio description. It's not perfect. You do need to disable the surround sound when you're using the screen reader. And I should say there are many, many areas where the screen reader doesn't work. For example, in third-party apps, in some of the system information screens, in settings, even in help, actually, the screen reader doesn't work. So this is very much, I think, early stage. It will give you access to the essentials, but certainly not everything. There are also a couple of minor irritations. Sometimes when you're watching a channel, when the next program starts, the channel name is announced out loud unexpectedly, and that can feel a little bit intrusive. And you don't have any options for changing that voice. If you don't like that voice, well, you're stuck with it. You can't speed it up. You can't choose a different voice. It is what it is. So there we are. That is our brief look at some of the accessibility features found from Sky Q. Of course, we have a ton of options for accessing TV services. And I guess for a lot of people, it's about the TV set itself. And is there any built-in accessibility there? I've obviously gone down the Sky Q route. Callum Stoneman, you've got cable.
Yeah, we've got Virgin Media. And theirs is interesting because the box itself doesn't have any accessibility features built in. I mean, I think it's, well, it definitely has got audio description. And I think there's some magnification options in there. But in terms of a screen reader, there isn't anything there. But the way that I access it is via the Virgin TV Go app on iOS. And I believe it's accessible on Android as well. I know some friends who are on Android and they use it. And that allows you to kind of view the TV guide. You can change the channel that your TV box is playing. So, you know, if you find a program that you like in the TV guide, you can just click on the program, click on watch on TV, and then it will just turn the channel on your TV box. And also some of the on-demand stuff as well. Not all of it, so you can't access things like Netflix in the app, but you can go to things like All4 or ITV Hub or BBC iPlayer, find the program, and again, just click on watch on TV and it will play that particular program. It will start streaming it. So it's not bad.
Seems like a bit of a faff, though, to have to use an app just to do the basics. I mean, it makes sense, obviously, if it comes to things like the planner, I suppose. But, you know, just sort of changing channel and stuff like that. What's the remote control like? Is it? Can you speak to it?
Yeah, so you don't have to use the app. I usually do because a lot of the time I'm sort of browsing the guide and then I'll find something that I like and then choose it from there. So I'm on the app anyway, kind of thing. The remote's really nice and tactile. It's got the classic kind of tactile dot on the number 5 and little tactile markings on the volume controls and things like that. So it is accessible. And yeah, there is voice control as well. And I think you can choose programs with it. So you could say play Coronation Street and it would bring it up on ITV Hub. But you're kind of lost at that point when you get to like a choose an episode. Then, you know, you can't do that by voice. But you can just hold down the voice control button and say a channel name, which is quite cool. So if you know that you want to watch something on ITV, you could just hold it the button down and say ITV or ITV2 and it will flick over to that channel for you.
Yeah, Sky Q's remote does something similar. And I think they changed the design of the Sky Q remote because I remember the first one had a touch sensitive area, which a lot of people didn't get on with. So actually having a physical button that activates the microphone is a way to go. But of course, Sky and Virgin are premium TV services. They're not cheap. You know, you can get offers, but, you know, when the offer runs out and the price goes up. How about you, Tasneem? How do you access TV?
Well, I have a bit of a dinosaur standard box, you know, just a normal TV. It's not a smart TV. I've had it for about 10 years, so I'm going to be in the market for updating it fairly soon. It'd be really interesting to know from you both, how would you record, you know, on the Virgin or the Qbox? Do they have recording facilities and how accessible are they?
So I think for Sky Q, I would tend to go towards the app. Is that the same for you, Callum, with Virgin?
Yeah, exactly the same with Virgin, yeah. So you can go on the app and you can click on record show or record series. And then in the app, under the TV tab, there's a recording section. And on there, you can view the recordings that are scheduled. And then you can view the recordings that are on your box as well and start playing them that way.
I tend to do it that way. However, you can browse the TV guide with the voice view or the voice guidance screen reader that's sort of built into Sky Q. But I find that I get a little bit impatient because you can't really adjust the voice very much. And so she's quite a slow speaker and it drives me crackers. So yeah, I would rather do it with my app.
Yeah, I'm also aware of LG and Samsung having their own inbuilt kind of accessibility functions as well. So I've seen demos of them and they look pretty good. I don't know what your thoughts are.
If I can be a little bit controversial here, and this is a similar sort of thought with the Sky Q thing as well. Don't get me wrong, it's great that they've got these features available. But the question for me is, are they being updated and are they being maintained and added to? Because, yeah, I mean, we've got a Samsung TV that we just use kind of if we want to watch TV while we're sort of laying in bed or something. And that's just got Freeview. So we haven't got the Virgin Media on there. We just got Freeview. And they work great if you just want to access your Freeview. You know, if you just want to browse the guide, browse the a kind of TV guide and browse the channels and what's currently on, then it will work fine. I don't think you can record on that TV. But as soon as you try and use the third-party apps, it just goes silent on you, and it's not interested. So if you just want to use Freeview, then you can use the built-in voice guidance. But yeah, as Dave said with the Sky Q, it's exactly the same on the Samsung. It doesn't work with the third-party apps, and there's very limited control of the voice. In fact, I find the voice really difficult to understand, if I'm completely honest.
So is there any streaming service that actually allows you access to third-party apps then?
I think the best option is something like the Apple TV when it comes to streaming, to be honest.
Sure, yeah, and that's absolutely where I am, sort of iPlayer, ITV Hub, or 4, my 5, Netflix, Amazon, Apple TV Plus, of course, lots of those services, Disney Plus, they are all accessible on the Apple TV box. And yes, it is a bit more, but if it's the streaming services you really want to access, then actually trying to get hold of an Apple TV might be the way to go. Other streaming TV boxes are available, of course, the Fire TV Stick. But we'd love to know how you access your TV, what works, what doesn't work, where the frustrations are. Do get in touch. Tasneem Arshad, Callum Stoneman, thanks again.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Kabhi aapne socha hai kaise aap naya zuban seekh sakte hain? Abhi jo falatan aa rahi hai wo aapko bata rahi hai aap kaise ye kar sakte hain? Naya zuban aap seekh sakte hain. Joe Fullerton is along now to tell us more about how you can learn a new language using technology.
It's always a pleasure to speak with our Technology for Life team and somebody who has been involved with RNIB's TFL for quite a while, and no stranger to technology is our TFL coordinator for Scotland, Joe Fullerton. A very warm welcome to Tech Talk, Joe. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Dave. It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, the reason we were keen to speak with you is you've been doing a little bit of research into accessible language learning apps. Is this something that people ask about a lot?
Occasionally. It's not probably one of the highest topics that we get asked about. People are generally, trying to deal with email and messaging, just the basic day-to-day stuff. But I think that once people get a bit more adept at using screen readers and magnification and so on, they often want to start challenging themselves and learning new things. And it occurred to me when I was learning language myself that because the best way to learn a language, to learn to speak, is to use audio, it occurred to me that it was a good medium for speech users, blind users, anyone using a screen reader could benefit from using audio-based apps.
Brilliant. Well, we'll get into the specific apps in just a moment, but I remember those sort of linguaphone cassettes that you used to be able to get for language learning, and I think there are some books in RNIB's library in the reading services catalogue for learning languages. I mean, it sounds like you're really into this subject. I mean, what languages do you speak, Joe?
Well, I only speak English and French to upper intermediate level. I'm trying to get to advanced and fluent level. And my motivation is that my father has lived in France for over 30 years and he's married to a French woman. And I go regularly to visit him. I've been 3 times this year to make up for not going at all during lockdown. And he's 85 now. And I've set myself a goal of becoming fluent in French by the time I'm 60. So I practice when I go to France, obviously. But I realised I needed to do more at home to improve my French.
Magnificent, or should I say magnifique. So I'm actually going to Germany at the end of September to run a marathon, I know. But my son is also studying German at school, and it'd be great to be able to help him. So I think we have lots and lots of reasons, even if you don't have family who live abroad. Sometimes you want to visit somewhere, you want to have a little bit of those language skills. And I know in French, quite often, what happens is when you go to France And if you try and speak French, French people tend to be really pleased that you made the effort. Even if your French isn't absolutely amazing, they appreciate that you sort of went to the trouble.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely true. And I've actually found that in any country that I've visited, if you make an effort to even just say please, hello and thank you in the native language, people really appreciate it. And French people are as welcoming as any other country. It's a complete myth that, you know, in Paris, perhaps sometimes, you know, they can be a bit brisk because it's a city like London, you know, and they don't have the time. But in general, when you go to France, people are so grateful that you're trying to speak in their language, and they take it as a real sign of respect and enthusiasm for their culture. So I'd recommend it for any language.
Okie dokie. Right, Joe, let's talk about some of those tools then. I mean, we all know there's an app for just about everything these days. So tell us about some of the apps you've found and some of the accessibility considerations that you've had to kind of keep in mind when researching this area.
Right. Well, I'm going to look at about four different apps on a scale of one very good for accessibility to, you know, an extreme scale of very poor. I wouldn't go near it, perhaps, if you're a screen reader user. So the one that I wouldn't recommend is Babbel. Well, I started with Duolingo, but I find it a little bit childish. So I moved on to Babbel. And after using the free version for a week, I paid about £40 to use it for a whole year, which I think is quite good value. That was a special offer. And of course, they're going to charge me more next year. So you've got to watch out for those recurring subscriptions. Babbel, I find, is not accessible with a screen reader. You can't access the matching exercises. They involve dragging and dropping. And you can't access the microphone. For some reason unknown to me, you just cannot get the microphone to turn on. Even though, you know, VoiceOver locates the button and you do a double tap, nothing happens and it doesn't record your speech. And I've found that with one or two other language apps as well, where there's a microphone involved. But some of them are fine. So when I discovered that Babbel was very poor, I then did a quick search, and this was on behalf of a customer because I did get an inquiry. And I discovered that one of the best websites and apps to use is OpenLearn or Open University app. And you can sign up for an Open Learn course, which is completely free. And about 5% of all the Open University courses are free. And that is actually a huge number of courses per year. So there are language courses available through Open Learn. The website is www.open.edu/openlearn. And the eight languages are English, Gaelic and Welsh. I think that's Scottish Gaelic, but it might be Irish. And then Chinese, French, German, Italian and Spanish. And in French, for example, they've got 11 courses at three different levels. So that would be enough to get you started. And what really impressed me was the website was very accessible, which is what you would expect of the Open University. They've always prided themselves on accessibility. And the app is a bit basic. It's not as you know, modernized. It's not as simplified as you'd expect a mobile app to be. But everything does work. You know, it has been optimized for use on a phone or tablet. So it's a bit traditional looking, but maybe that's a good thing for studying. Anyway, the thing that impressed me the most was that they provided alternative exercises when you have to match the English words with the foreign language words, which usually involves dragging and dropping. And it's very difficult to do if you're doing it on a phone and you're using VoiceOver or TalkBack. There's a link to an accessible alternative where they've used a very sensible method. They number all the English words and they provide a letter for each French word or German word or whatever. And all you've got to do is match the numbers to the letters, and it's really easy to do. And then they give you the answers as well, so you mark it yourself. Whereas some of these, you know, auto exercises are marked by the app. So because this one's accessible, you mark it yourself. But that's okay. It's good to do that kind of activity yourself. And then also, they sometimes present text in an image. And I thought, oh no, surely they haven't fallen into that trap. But then I noticed there was a link saying long text description. And when I opened that, it explained that this was an image of text. And then they gave all the text word for word. So that meant that I could then respond, if I was using a screen reader, I could respond to the question about the text. So that's the Open University. And of course, there's all sorts of other subjects on there, Open Learn, that you could do. So I recommend you give that a try. And now I want to move on to an app, which I think is an absolute revelation. And I want to thank Babbel for introducing me to this. So the less accessible Babbel app suggested that I might want to use an app called Tandem. And Tandem is, I think, relatively new. And some people have set up Tandem to promote understanding between nations and to promote language learning. So the idea is, it's designed like WhatsApp. You can, in theory, search for people, but it actually will pair you with someone who's learning the language that you're interested in. You declare what languages you speak, and then it will automatically match you. For example, I speak English, so it matches me with French people who want to learn English. And so far, it's been really successful. And I've made, let's say, half a dozen new friends who I now have audio conversations with over Wi-Fi. So it's really similar to WhatsApp. It's like doing a WhatsApp phone call, and you've also got the option of a video call. And if you have got useful sight and you feel you'd benefit from being able to see the person, I do generally find that being able to see people's faces helps, because it helps you with expression, and it helps you, if you can read someone's lips, it helps you work out what foreign words they're saying. And this is particularly helpful in a language like French, where a lot of words are run together, so that you can't hear the differences between the words. And if you can see a person's mouth moving, that definitely helps. So, you know, if you are using a screen reader, if you aren't interested in video, you can just use the audio and you can use the messaging. And that's how you get to know someone before deciding if you want to have an audio or video call with them. And there is a built-in kind of self-managing system, very similar to Be My Eyes. So with Be My Eyes, you can report a volunteer if they make you feel uncomfortable, and the volunteer can report a user of the app if they break some of the rules. And it's the same in Tandem. You can report a person and you can block them. So you can immediately block someone who makes you uncomfortable, and you can report someone when you're ready to Tandem and say you're not happy. You can also do a reference, usually a friendly, polite one. After having a conversation with somebody, you can comment on their level of language, comment on how helpful they were, and say whether you enjoyed the chat. So I personally think it's a safe app to use. I wouldn't mention it otherwise. I think it's got enough built-in protections, and I think it's very reasonably priced. It's free for as long as you wish, if you don't mind adverts, which pop up at the very top and don't really get in the way. Or if you're prepared to pay £11.50 a year, that's probably discounted. Price will probably go up next year. But it's £11.50 a year to get rid of the adverts. And a further option is you can see the location of other people if they're near you. So I've already located a French girl living in Edinburgh, for instance. It's not particularly near where I live, but I visit Edinburgh regularly. So I'm going to meet up with her when I'm in Edinburgh. And it also means I could meet up with people if I go to France. So I'm very impressed with Tandem. I think the people that have set it up have come up with a brilliant idea for promoting international relations and helping people to learn English or French or whatever. And it's absolutely brilliant in that it's really free. I mean, you might pay to get rid of the adverts, but you're not paying to talk to people. Whereas if you pay for a tutor, you're going to be paying at least £5, £10, £15, £20 an hour, maybe more, £40, £50 an hour. And I have been using Babbel Live classes, by the way, because I'm sighted and I find the Babbel apps okay for me personally. I've been using Babbel Live classes, and they're obviously online using Zoom. And I find those very good, but they're very expensive. I paid for a year's worth and it was over £200. But then I can do as many classes as I like. So that's Tandem. So my final app that I'd like to talk about is the one that I've actually used the most. French Today is my favourite app of all the ones I've used. Although I do really rate Tandem as well. French Today is not free in that the audiobooks are quite expensive. However, there is a large amount of free material available through French Today, through their website, which is www.frenchtoday.com. They provide a newsletter, which arrives every week in my email inbox, with lots of lessons included in that, including audio. And they provide blogs as well. There's a blog. So the two free sample books, one of them you access via the website, but once you've downloaded the book, it will appear in the app if you install the app. So it's the French Today app, and the app is free. The app itself is free. The audiobooks, the lesson books, there are four of them. So there's beginner, lower intermediate, intermediate, and advanced. And I bought all of them at once, because there is a discount if you buy them all at once. So you're talking quite a lot of money to buy the books, but you could just use the free materials, and they're of such good quality that I think you should definitely give it a look if you're interested in French. I don't know if there's an equivalent app for German, Spanish, Italian, etc. It would be produced by a completely different company. Camille delivers French today in conjunction with her French husband, and she's bilingual in French and English, American English, but thankfully there aren't that many differences. And because she's bilingual, she gives really, really clear explanations in English of everything. And because she's a qualified teacher, she's been teaching for over 20 years, she gives really clear explanations of French grammar, subjects that have often mystified me. And she understands what it's like for learners, and she often talks about the difficulties of the language. She acknowledges how complex French is. And she makes a really important point that I didn't understand, that the French taught in school and the French in your textbook is very, very different from the French that is spoken in France today. So one of the best things about her audiobooks is that they all offer two soundtracks as a minimum. The first soundtrack is enunciated French, which is correct schoolbook style French, grammatically correct and carefully spoken by Camille. And the other track is called Modern French, and it's much faster, and it involves quite a lot of words which are glided together. So she uses this phrase gliding, this term gliding, for phrases like je ne suis pas, I am not. In modern French, it's pronounced je suis pas. So she gives examples like that, and it's not always that extreme. But she actually explains how the French, as it's written down, is a very different language. She actually calls it a different language. It's almost a different language from the French that's spoken. There is actually a very good connection between the two, so don't worry. But one thing about Camille that I do find is she sometimes over-eggs the pudding. She'll sometimes say something's really complicated when it isn't, or she'll say that a French word and an English word don't correspond at all when they do. But I think that's because she's a French native, and it's just one of those things. So that, you know, there's the odd error in translation that creeps in. But I personally think the fact that she's a native speaker is a really good thing. And I would look for language courses, language teachers, and language apps where the content has been provided by native speakers of that language. It's much better than where an English speaker has created lessons, in my opinion. Maybe I'm a bit biased.
So there's lots and lots of information for everyone to digest here, Jo. So what I'd like to do is we'll try and summarise it in a little bit. But I had two questions for you. One is, how much are language learning apps, the developers of those apps, aware of accessibility?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'll just take that one first. It seems to me that some of them are definitely aware of it, because of the four apps that I was testing, four or five apps, most of them scored quite highly for accessibility. I was really surprised, for example, when I tried out the Mondly app earlier today. It's a very visual app, and I thought the matching exercises wouldn't be accessible, but they actually were. So the Mondly app is the first modern style app. You know, it's very visual, it's colourful, it's got images. And yet I didn't spot too many problems. There was a problem with the speaker, though. The speaker button didn't work. So if I wanted to get the word to be announced in French again, I couldn't do that. It didn't recognise the speaker button properly. It wouldn't open it. It wouldn't action it. So that was a problem. It's a bit like the microphone problem that I was having with Babbel. So those kind of problems are quite common. And I think that RNIB and other organisations for other countries need to contact some of these major language app developers and point out that there's no reason why a microphone button should be inaccessible. After all, Siri's microphone button is accessible, and WhatsApp's microphone button is accessible, and the one that's built into the keyboard on the iPhone and the Android phone is accessible. So there's no reason for a microphone button not to work.
Indeed. Have you tried the Magic Tap? Does that press the microphone button? Sometimes the two-finger double tap will activate the default button in an app.
Do you know what? I need to try that next. So I will try that. So that's the two-finger double tap. I haven't tried that today. So that might work. Hmm.
The other question I had for you, Jo, these apps, are they exclusively iPhone or are they multi-platform?
I would say that most of them are multi-platform. So all the main ones like Babbel, Mondly, Tandem, they're all available for iOS and Android. And I think quite a few of them have a Windows app, but I haven't had a chance to investigate that. And if they don't have a Windows app, they have a Windows website. And the websites are often really good.
Can I just circle back, because we kind of skimmed over Duolingo pretty quickly, and that's the one for which I see the most adverts. You know, it comes up on social media and they advertise around the place. I would even say that they're possibly the market leader, would you say?
Yeah, I think they are in terms of visibility, yeah.
Yeah, so, but you said that you found that quite sort of childlike. So maybe it's, you know, for the absolute beginner. How is it for accessibility, Duolingo?
I suspect it's not great. I haven't tested it today. I think I've tested it in the past. It's got a lot of matching exercises and it's got the usual microphone issue. The magic tap may work, though. So I could get back to you on that. But the thing I don't like about Duolingo is it's very into gamification. So that's very motivating for some people, but it can be irritating for others. So it has badges and icons and reminders that you should use it daily. And I find that too much. It's too much noise. I want to just get on with the practice of learning. I don't really need to be encouraged. And Mondly similarly has these gamification ideas behind it. So for instance, there's a daily lesson. I couldn't choose the level. So even though I'm intermediate, I couldn't choose that level. I could only choose the beginner level. And it's making me do a daily lesson for 7 days in a row before I can access a more fun thing called the weekly quiz. And that's irritating. And it's against one of the principles of, in my opinion, good e-learning design, where they should let the user be in charge of the learning. You should be able to choose when you learn, how fast you learn, how frequently you learn. And you should be able to revisit things. And you should be able to access all the materials when you're ready. So I don't like being controlled by the app. So I think they've made a mistake. They've made a mistake there. But otherwise, Mondly is very good. I'm impressed with it. And it does have a reputation for being quite groundbreaking. It's augmented learning, which means that they're trying to encourage you with things like there's a bot which speaks to you in your chosen language and it poses questions. And when you answer them spontaneously, it will respond according to the answer that you make. So I was very impressed with that. I was very impressed with the language assistant. I'm calling her a bot. It's a bit of a, you know, she's a robot, but it's a bit unfair to call her that because she comes across as a person when you're speaking to her. She's pretty cool.
So, Jo, let's try and do a really succinct wrap-up here. And then maybe on a future episode, we could have you demonstrate, you know, one of these apps or a couple of these apps so we could really hear them in action. So we've talked about Duolingo, which we think is probably the market leader. Babel, which you found some Babel, which you found some accessibility issues with. OpenLearn is a free option from the Open University. Tandem is really about bringing people together. You're a big fan of French Today, of course, because that's your language of choice. And Mondly, you're also recommending. So a real good selection there of language learning apps. And if you are listening to this and you are thinking about learning a language, maybe give some of these apps a go. Jo, what's the best way for people to get in contact with you if they perhaps want to chat through some of the issues that you've raised or they want to sort of compare notes in terms of accessible language learning apps?
Well, probably the easiest thing is to drop us a line by email at TFL, that's Tango Foxtrot Lima, Technology for Life, tfl@rnib.org.uk. Or you can call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 and ask for the technology team.
Brilliant. Jo Fullerton from RNIB's Technology for Life team and all the information you have shared about accessible learning language apps. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tasneem Arshad, you speak several languages. Have you ever tried to use technology to learn a language?
I haven't actually, because growing up, my parents spoke both Punjabi and Urdu, and I kind of learned 2.5 languages at the same time. So outside of the home, it was English. Inside the home, it was different languages, Punjabi and Urdu. And particularly my grandparents, who they did speak limited English, but it was mainly their mother tongue. And so we learned it, you know, kind of at the same time, I guess, as we were learning English. So it was very simple at that point. We didn't really need to access any technology, and probably the right level of technology at that point wasn't around either. But I have considered, I would like to learn a couple of European languages, particularly German and French. And I've been to college to evening classes to kind of learn. but I kind of struggled in terms of time commitments for that. So I think having an app that would be able to do that at your own pace independently, and you can monitor your progress, would be absolutely amazing.
How about you, Callum Stoneman? Do you fancy learning another language?
I mean, I struggle with English still, to be honest. No, it's interesting because I did try, obviously I did languages at school. So I did French at school, but yeah, I can't remember any of it. And my grandparents used to have a house in Spain. So again, when they were over there, they had like a holiday home over there. And I used to speak a little bit of Spanish because, you know, there were people there who only spoke Spanish. But again, that was years ago and I can't remember any of it. I just kind of somehow managed to learn the kind of key phrases that I needed to know. But then as soon as you stop using it, it just went. And that was just trying to learn by memory. You know, if there was an app, as you know, Tasneem said there, where you can go back and you can look at previous modules and monitor your progress and keep track of everything. I'm on board with this.
Joe Fullerton's clearly into it in a big old way, but if you just need to translate a small amount of language, you can use your smart speaker or even Siri for that, actually. I remember recently being away in France and doing just that. So actually, you've always got a translator not that far away if you just need to convert a small amount of language, but obviously that's not going to necessarily teach you a language. Well, Tasneem, if you do try any of the apps recommended by Joe to learn French or German, we'd love to hear how you get on with that.
Definitely, we'll keep you posted.
And how about you? Are you listening to something in another language? Maybe you've tried some of the books from RNIB's reading services. I know they have some books to learn language, audio books at that, so you can download them on the Easy Reader app or from the reading services website. How would you approach learning another language? Maybe there's a role for Braille in there. Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. And we look forward to you getting in touch. That's it for this time on Tech Talk. Do tune in next time when we'll be talking about how alt tags are helping blind and partially sighted people access images from space, no less. And we'll also have an update about the My Eyes app. So do tune in for our next episode of Tech Talk. Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad, thanks so much again for your company. Are you off to learn another language or access your digital TV? Whatever you're up to, have a great week and we'll speak with you both again soon.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
From me, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, until next time, bye for now.